Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Chertow from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from London is Jonathan Armstrong. Jonathan is a partner at Quarterly Compliance. He'll be speaking at the 2019 Compliance and Ethics Institute on the topic of learning from data breaches, and we wanted to make sure that that knowledge got spread a little bit more widely. Jonathan, thanks a ton for talking to us today and also for speaking at the annual meeting.
Well, thanks so much, Adam. It's a great event, and I love these podcasts as well.
Excellent. So let's dive right in. There's been a goodly number, in fact, some would say a disconcertingly large number of data breach cases recently. Let's start with Europe. What can we learn from recent data breach cases there?
Well, you're right, first of all, that there have been a lot. By the figures of the European Data Protection Board, there are around about 90,000. Those figures are almost certainly now an underestimate. You know, we know that in the Netherlands alone, there have been just under 21,000 data breaches reported under GDPR, about 12,600 in each of the UK and Germany, and smaller countries like Spain, having significant numbers as well. So we know that there are a lot of data breaches going around the system, and we know that regulators are starting to reach conclusions on some of those investigations. So our estimates, we track these things across Europe, and we'd estimate that somewhere between 400 and 500 cases have reached some sort of a public conclusion in terms of some sort of sanction. Now, obviously, there are some big cases ongoing at the moment. We have all seen, I guess, the notices of intention to fine in the BA case and the Marriott case, where there are going to be some likely high fines. They're not fines issued yet. The companies have a chance to make representation. But we know that Marriott, for example, has made provision in its accounts for a fine heading its way. So there are loads of lessons, I think, that we can learn from the early cases. And I'll go through them in some in a bit more detail in Maryland. But I think amongst those lessons would be you need to have a plan. Data breaches are inevitable. Even the best run organization is going to have a data breach. You need to know your data and your third parties. So, for example, we know that the BA breach almost certainly involved a breach of a third party system rather than their own system. And in Marriott, it was an entity that they'd acquired where the breach had happened. You need to look at your team. Now, compliance has to have a seat at the table in responding to data breaches. You can't let the IT guys alone run data breaches. And I think one of our biggest concerns sometimes is IT-led responses. Oftentimes, it's the IT team that made the slip that led to the breach. So they shouldn't be marking their own homework. And compliance has to have a place on that team. And that will involve meeting them in advance. It'll involve rehearsing data breaches because you need muscle memory. You only have 72 hours under GDPR to respond. You'll need to be able to mobilize the troops quickly. The team will have to have worked with each other before. I'm big fans of something called a data protection impact assessment. It's mandatory in many cases under GDPR. I was a critic of it initially, partly because the initial proposal was that we'd use a set form that the European Commission would draw up. That isn't how it ended up, thankfully. But it's a process by which the compliance team, the IT team, the corporate security team, HR, whoever else needs to be involved, can look at risk together and try and minimize data breaches. And then I guess two of the other things that I'd highlight amongst the 10 or so that I'm going to talk about in Maryland is treat regulators with respect. I know it oughtn't to need saying, but we've seen from some of the cases where people have shown disrespect to the regulator. And then I think one of the other things I would say is always be focused on the time and always be prepared to justify your decision. So you might have an incident that isn't actually a data breach, or you consider at the time that it isn't a data breach, like a network intrusion where you don't think data went. But you'll need to keep records because regulators can ask to look at them at any time. And increasingly, we're seeing what are technically called data subjects, you might call them victims in a data breach, ask for information about breaches. You have to be ready to provide that to justify what you've done.
I think one of the surprises that has emerged of late in the U.S. is the size of the response by consumers. In the Equifax case, so many people wanted the cash settlement that they had to warn consumers that, wait a minute, that's a defined amount of money. With so many people requesting it, you know, you may not get but a small fraction of the dollars you were expecting. I wonder if the news is hiding the fact that consumers are getting less passive about this and business should be prepared for more consumer activity. What are you seeing?
I think that's definitely true. I think, like, I don't know, the music of Foreigner and the McDonald's milkshake, class actions are a somewhat unwelcome arrival from the US on these shores. And I think that's a trend that's here to stay, really. I think the you know, the whole debate around Equifax has been interesting. You know, effectively the bank was empty because so many people wanted to withdraw cash from it. I think that is a taste of things to come. You know, in the BA case, we have a hearing in the UK on October 4th, which might create a class action post-breach for BA in a similar way. And that's more or less unheard of in Europe. In some countries in Europe, class actions are not technically allowed, but courts and consumer organizations and litigants are working on innovative ways to change that. So Max Schrems, for example, has had some long-running litigation over whether he can bring action against Facebook. There have been other cases against Google in the UK. And as I said, post-breach actions are becoming more common. There's a case involving Morrisons over here that has decided effectively that a corporation that employs somebody who's responsible for a breach has to pick up the tab when a breach happens and make people whole again. The class action system's still slightly different despite that. It tends to be opt-in rather than opt-out. But that's the other reason that Equifax is really interesting, that we see that more and more people are exercising their rights after a breach. And as a result, that has all sorts of ramifications for a corporation. Firstly, we know that under GDPR, the potential fine, if you have a breach and fail to report it in time, could be as high as 6% of your total global revenue. So 4 + 2 = 6, if for those GDPR nerds that follow the fine tables. We know that if you have to make whole consumers, that costs a whole load of money as well, and Equifax has taught us that. But the other critical thing that we know is that, as a general rule, share price drops after a breach becomes public. So the total hit on a corporation could be 6, 7, 8, 10% of its value by the time you've added all of those consequences together. And that increases the odds for compliance professionals, not just because it's a big number, but also because you get into issues of insider trading and knowledge and whether people can trade stock or shares, et cetera, and when you need to make announcements. So the game just got a lot more serious, I think, because of cases like Equifax and because of the big dollar numbers involved.
Well, you know, those numbers are certainly very large and game-changing to consider. Now, in reading the tea leaves, what are businesses getting wrong in terms of meeting the requirements of GDPR?
I think one of the things that they're getting wrong is that they've not concentrated on their real risk in the heart of the matter. And what some organizations have done is they've got a, you know, big four firm of accountants, or they've got a GDPR consultancy to map where their data is. And that's part of the answer, but it's not the whole answer. And generally speaking, you can very quickly assess where your main areas of vulnerability are likely to be with most organizations, and you need to get on and start addressing them. So like anything, you can't remove risk from the entire organization, but you can intelligently look at where the most likely risk is. So I think number one would be to do a proper risk assessment. Number two, I think, would be to rehearse. As I've said earlier, data breaches are an inevitable fact of life. So get good at handling them. And that will involve some procedures, but they'll really look like fire drills, some sort of instant calls to action for the business. You need to invest in proper procedures as well, and that might be a software solution. You know, for full disclosure, that's the route we've gone down, but it could involve Excel spreadsheets or pen and ink. But you'll need some sort of procedure, you know, a red ring binder that has all your processes in. Of course, when you're looking at data breach, that includes things like unavailability. So you have to have a system that will work when your internet is down. And then I guess the other thing I'd say, building on something I said earlier, is look at who's interfacing with a regulator. It's not a job for an enthusiastic amateur. Regulators have the power to do you significant harm. So don't delegate that to somebody relatively junior in IT. It needs to be a proper interface, because these regulators have big powers.
Well, and all of what you said really brings home the point that while you can't control risks completely, what you can do is control your response to it. And by practicing in advance and having plans in place, you're much better shape than if you're caught flat-footed when things go awry. So we've talked about what can go wrong. Anything good out there in terms of what you're seeing that companies are getting right when it comes to both GDPR and then other regimes in terms of protecting data?
Yeah, I think there are definitely some positives. I think that compliance officers who have had a seat at the table in a data breach and have proved their worth, have their stock has risen within the organization. They've managed to leverage budget because they've been respected more, and they've been included in more decisions around prevention. So for many organizations, that realization has come after a data breach. But for some, they've done things like data breach rehearsals, which have led management to see the critical role in having really good compliance staff engaged and used to dealing with crises. So that's definitely a positive. I think the light that's been shone on data has allowed some businesses to pick up some questionable practices. And it's not just all about the technology. So to give you one example, we've had a client where they've had a habit of printing off documents and leaving them in the back of planes, trains, and automobiles. And a simple investment, you know, a couple of dollars each to put padlocks on people's bags has made all of that data much more secure. And the other advantage of that approach is because people are told that they have to attach padlocks to, you know, briefcases that hold paper files, it's an hourly reminder almost of the need to secure other data, so not to, you know, talk in crowded trains about the next deal they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. So I think properly handled, data breaches and GDPR can elevate the role of compliance within the business, and that's certainly something to be welcomed.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for sharing these insights both here and at the Compliance and Ethics Institute. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turtletaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.